KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. For the past decade, Deb Perlman has been cooking beautiful meals and sharing them on her popular blog, The Smitten Kitchen. And she does it out of her small New York apartment.
I hear people say I have a tiny kitchen and I don't think I can cook the stuff that you cook in it. And I'm like, they may not realize that my kitchen's tiny. And I'm like, you can't use that excuse with me.
Deb Perlman has now published her second cookbook, Smitten Kitchen Every Day, and we'll talk to her about squeezing good cooking into busy lives and get her tips and take your questions about what to serve for the holidays. Join us after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Deb Perlman started her food blog, The Smitten Kitchen, more than a decade ago. Her new cookbook, her second, brings weeknight recipes for people with busy lives who don't want to resort to sad, uninspiring cooking. And the new book is called Smitten Kitchen Every Day, Triumphant and Unfussy New Favorites. She joins us this hour to talk about recipes in her book, blog, tips, and holiday cooking. And welcome, Deb Perlman.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And I should tell listeners who may not be familiar with you that you have become quite popular, to put it mildly. You have a loyal following. I think you were getting about 8 million views a month back in the blog days, and now have about 600,000 followers on Instagram. And so a lot of this has to do with the fact that you kind of take the drudgery out of cooking, make it easy to make recipes, and also say size of kitchen doesn't matter.
I hope so. I mean, I'm definitely hoping to get that across. I'm not, I don't have the hugest kitchen, and I'm not somebody who's ever aspired to be a chef in a restaurant. But I like playing around in the kitchen, and I like cooking food that inspires me. And I think focusing on food that you're excited about versus food you should eat or food with this number of steps, it makes it more fun for the person who's doing the cooking.
Well, obviously you're having fun with it. Plus, what's interesting to me is I have this image of you almost like a chemist experimenting with all these different kinds of things in the kitchen to a great degree and being really a bit of an artist. So many new recipes that you've come up with here. Any idea how many?
Oh, my goodness. I'm not even sure. And also, I always feel it's like it's a strange thing just because I have a lasagna that I like to make. I mean, I've hardly invented lasagna or anything, but usually I'm playing around with proportions and adding different sauces. So there are about 1,100 recipes, maybe 1,200 now on the site. And each book has had about 110 recipes in it. And this is the second book.
And since you started out, you had a couple of adorable kids. I've seen pictures of them, so I can attest to that. You do the photography.
Oh, well, thank you.
Also a pretty good photographer, I must say. Let's talk, though, about the subtitle here, Triumphant and Unfussy. What's triumphant? What's unfussy?
The triumphant part is I feel like, you know, as my life got a lot busier and I didn't have as much time to cook, and I started to understand for the first time why perhaps not everyone jumps with joy when it's time to eat dinner or cook dinner, I found that what was out there was there was a lot of chef cookbooks, and then there were a lot of, you know, 20-minute meals and 7-ingredient fixes. And I felt that as somebody who liked to cook, there wasn't a whole lot in between. Most books were either defined by, you know, chef aspirations or by rushing you out of the kitchen, or basically based on this idea that cooking was drudgery. And that's not how I found it. I wanted to focus instead on this idea of triumphant cooking, which for me is really just, you've come home, you've had a long day, you think you're not in the mood to cook, you think you might just, you know, throw together a sandwich, and then you find something that you could make from what you have, and when you pull it off, you feel awesome. You want to do like...
You feel like Hannibal, maybe, or a conqueror? Triumphant brings that to mind.
Yes, you do, though, because you were like planning on making, I don't know, peanut butter and jelly for dinner, and instead you made like pasta with chickpeas from 4 ingredients, and I don't know, I feel like I want to do a victory lap around the kitchen. I'm so, like, I get excited about it.
It's a small kitchen. You're going to have to do a lot of victory laps, I think.
It's good because I'm not a great runner, so it's perfect. But it's just this idea that you pulled it off when you thought you couldn't, and plus, it becomes, instead of like the drudgery part of your day, maybe the highlight.
We're talking to Deb Perlman. She's an author and creator of the cooking blog Smitten Kitchen, and her new cookbook is called Smitten Kitchen Every Day, Triumphant and Unfussy, New Favorites. And We'll bring you, our listeners, into this shortly. We certainly know many of you have some holiday questions and questions about great recipes, because certainly Deb Pearlman has a lot of answers. But let's talk a little bit about Thanksgiving Day. Best ways to cook a turkey and best kinds of turkey from your perspective?
I mean, again, if you have a very large crowd, it's hard to get away with a smaller turkey. But I think most people agree that a small to mid-size usually get the best flavor from it. If you have upwards of, like, let's say 22 people, it might be nice to get two turkeys just to get, like, one with the best flavor. I feel like everyone has their favorite way of roasting turkey, and they should just keep doing it if they're happy with it. I've done both wet brines and dry brines, and I find that the dry brine, which is really just liberally salting and peppering your turkey for a couple days before to really get it well seasoned, and you get a very juicy bird, but you don't have the mess of wet brining. I did a wet brine last year, and it was a mess.
And what about stuffing? Do you stuff?
I don't stuff. I call it stuffing, but it's actually dressing. I like it outside the bird for two reasons. One, if I always have people at the table who don't eat meat, and it allows you to, you know, it makes it vegetarian if you don't put chicken or turkey broth in it. And also, I find that when you put it inside the bird, you usually have to cook it a little bit longer to ensure that the stuffing temperature is food safe, you know, that doesn't have any raw meat juices in it. And that leads to an overcooked bird.
You have a recommendation for a vegetarian or vegan Thanksgiving dish?
Oh, my goodness. I have so many. I feel like vegetable sides are kind of my favorite part sometimes. I actually do an old school green bean casserole, but I make it with old school flavors, but I make it with a fresh mushroom sauce, and I part cook the green beans so they don't get soggy, and I love to put the crispy onions on top. I feel like when people have it from scratch, they remember why it might have been good one day, and it's not dreaded the way it usually is.
And I'm sorry, go ahead, please.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, go on.
I didn't mean it. There was a pause there, I do sometimes jump in when there are pauses, but just wondering about if you have maybe better alternatives to turkey generally as a centerpiece to a meal on turkey, on Turkey Day, on Thanksgiving.
You know, I find that in my family, like, we all like turkey, but we really like the sides. I don't like to skimp on the sides. I feel like it's really nice to have one really rich side, like maybe a potato gratin or a mixed root vegetable gratin. I think it's really nice to do the green beans. Gotta have the cranberry sauce. I love making stuffing. I mean, I'm just getting started. I think some roasted carrots or squash are really nice on the table. And I really like doing a salad too. I feel like salad often gets overlooked at Thanksgiving, but when you put it out, people are usually happy to have a little oasis from the richness of all the other food out there.
Again, we're talking to Deb Pearlman, and what holiday cooking questions do you have, or for that matter, general recipe questions? And those of you who are familiar with Deb's recipes may indeed want to join us and talk about success with them, or for that matter, from your perspective and your palate, maybe not success. We'd certainly like to hear from you and hear your thoughts and hear the questions that you might have. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786, and you can join us now at that number. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us with any questions you might have or comments. Our email address is forum@kqed.org, or go to our website and post questions or comments there. You can do that at kqed.org/forum and simply click on the segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about potato pancakes. I know they're big in your judgment. Latkes, we call them where I come from. The greasier, the better, unfortunately. But you have some things to say about potato pancakes. I mean, I know you like them with an egg that's fried on top, but you also think that they are good to eat year-round and good for breakfast, too.
I feel like they could be, it's sort of like a really great hash brown in a way. I also really like to put them out, I mean, especially if it's the holidays anyway and it's overlapping with Hanukkah, but even if isn't, if you make them mini, they're really lovely at parties. You could put some, you know, creme fraiche and caviar on it, or you could use some other, like, little bits of minced pickled vegetables, but I feel like they're very versatile. I also like that you can make them in advance and you can retoast them and they heat up really well.
And there are a lot of recipes.
Eat them for breakfast, too.
Eat them any time of day. Go ahead, is what you said.
go for it.
Deb Pearlman, again, his new book is called Smitten Kitchen Every Day, and Triumphant and Unfussy New Favorites is the subtitle. Let me read some comments here. Actually, a tweet first. Vanessa tweets, we wrap our turkey in pork because my family is Cuban and they are more or less obsessed with the taste of roast pig. Leah writes, kimchi goes great with turkey. We started having it when we had friends from South Korea over for Thanksgiving one year and have had it ever since. I think I'm making your apple cake this year, always a hit. And Brittany writes, how do I keep homemade macaroni and cheese from drying out? I need to make it ahead of time this year, and I would love some tips.
Oh, I think it's a great thing to make in advance. But the thing is that if you're using a recipe where you've already boiled the macaroni and you've made a sauce, instead of reheating it, you could probably just bake it, because I feel like it would take probably 20 to 30 minutes to reheat it. And usually you only bake it for about 30 minutes. So you could just leave it fully assembled and ready to bake. Or again, I find it reheats really well. I think you're more at risk for the pasta seeming overcooked, but I don't think really anybody minds that. If you're worried about the pasta seeming overcooked, though, I am a big fan of when I do a pasta bake, not just taking 1 minute off the cooking time as you would for like al dente pasta, but to take a full 2 to 2.5 minutes.
And let's take some callers here. We got Caroline first who wants to talk with you, Deb. Caroline, go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I'm a huge fan of the blog, and I've been reading it and going to it for daily dinners and any ideas that I have, and I'm not a fancy or particularly good cook, in my opinion, but I depend on Thin Kitchen for everything from cookies to just a daily dinner, and so I thank you for that. And I wanted to say the dish of yours that I absolutely love, and I rave about it and give away the recipe to everyone. It's so simple. It's the farro, the one-pot farro dish with tomatoes. And I put eggs on top.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I absolutely love it, and I make it like once a week.
Can you tell us a little more about that dish, Deb? What is it exactly?
So what it is that it had started with this recipe I'd seen in a magazine for a one-pan pasta. And you take, maybe you would take like fettuccine and halved cherry tomatoes, a thinly sliced onion, I'm trying to remember if there's garlic, not off the top of my head, and a little bit of oil and seasoning. And you basically just cook the pasta with a little bit of water and all of these things in it, and it kind of self-sauces itself. I know it was very popular, but I didn't really care for the texture of the pasta. I found it a little bit gummy. But when I'm cooking something like farro, which is this hearty grain, I often want it to be saucier. So it was perfect. I took the same approach with the tomatoes and the thinly sliced onion and a little bit of water. And I do it with farro. And it is honestly, it's so good. It's like this tomato sauce. The onion is really mild. It's not sharp at all. It's well seasoned. And usually we serve it with a little bit of slivered basil and some Parmesan on top. And I've heard from so many people that either they thought they didn't like the grain and they started eating it, or it's their kid's favorite dish. And it's such a nice alternative to pasta, too.
Actually, you're reminding me of another dish that I was not familiar with that that you are strongly in favor of, and that's shakshuka.
Yes. Well, I mean, there's definitely a theme here with eggs, for sure. But it's eggs cooked in the, it's a North African, there are a lot of places that it hails from where it's popular, dish of eggs baked in a spicy tomato sauce. And what I love about eggs baked in spicy tomato sauce is that there are versions all over the world. You have versions in Italy where it's in a spicy garlicky sauce. It's a very common dish, and it's really nice. You can with the shakshuka, you might serve it with pitas. We think of it as a breakfast food, but I think it's very common for lunch or dinner. I sometimes will scoop it onto toast, or you can just eat it with a knife and fork.
And here's Donna. Donna, join us. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you very much for this segment. I enjoy Schmidt and Kitchen, too. I'm kind of quirky in that I like to enjoy myself when I'm entertaining. So I do as much as possible ahead of time. So for Thanksgiving, I get some turkey wings and turkey legs and broil them and use the dripping scent and the broth that I make afterwards to make gravy. So my gravy's made ahead of time. All I have to do is heat it up. I also use the broth for my dressing. So the dressing's made ahead of time.
Oh, wow.
And just very smart. As much as I do beforehand. And then I enjoy the day as well as my guests.
Well, you're getting some good tips here, Deb.
These are great tips. I, too, am a big fan of doing when you're entertaining to do everything in advance that you can, because what's the point of having like a great dinner party or having this great, you know, all of your family coming into town to hang out for Thanksgiving and you don't even see them? That's kind of a bummer if you're doing all that cooking.
In fact, here is Noel who says pomegranates are abundant this time of year in farmers markets. They're great in a salad. Are you an advocate of pomegranates? You love pomegranates?
I'm a big fan. They don't really grow on the East Coast, but we definitely get them. I want to see if I can steal some back before I go back to New York. They're beautiful. I also feel like they add a little like bit of glitter to salads. They make it feel really festive and holiday-ish. I feel like you could take your regular green salad and toss it throughout. It's not just like this sweet sour punch, but it looks really pretty.
Well, we're getting some good ideas from listeners, and I know listeners have questions also about holiday cooking. And you can join us with Deb Perlman. Our toll-free number again is 866-733-6786 if you have a question for her, if you'd like to talk with her, or you can email us, forum@kqed.org. I remember reading a couple of things that struck me. I read once that you had said, bourbon, artichokes, and things that taste like burnt sugar are the things you love the most. And listeners may want to weigh in along those. But there are a lot of what you call irresistible recipes, not only in your new book, but in an article that appeared in Bon Appetit. You're talking about, for example, pizza beans?
Mm-hmm.
Irresistible?
Again, I mean, it sounds a little odd. And the funny thing is that wasn't actually the original name of it. What I wanted to do was I've had gigante beans, like Greek style, with a little bit of tomato in the sauce. And I've done a whole bunch of things with beans before. But I loved the idea of giving it kind of a baked ziti treatment. I'm using it instead of the pasta. So it's basically this nice vegetable base where you have tomatoes and you have some greens and you have vegetables, and then you add these white beans and then you cover it with cheese and you bake it. And I was trying to convince my 5-year-old, he was 5 at the time, to try it, and he wanted nothing to do with it because he was 5 years old. And so I said, it's like pizza, it's like pizza beans. And amazingly, this did the trick. I think it's a fun alternative to the regular pasta bake, and it's something different to do with beans, which a lot of people seem to welcome.
And Keith wants to know what you suggest for Brussels sprouts for Thanksgiving.
Ooh. I mean, one of my favorite ways to cook Brussels sprouts is to roast them whole until they get really crackly and crisp on the outside and they're really soft on the inside. But I kind of stay away from roasting trays of vegetables on Thanksgiving. So you have so many other things to put out. It seems easier to have a preparation where you could do it ahead and just rewarm it. Or I really like a shaved Brussels sprout salad. I have one on the site with a little bit of apple in it, and it also has a bit of pomegranate and a few other ingredients and some spices. And it's a really nice, raw, crunchy salad. And I've heard from a lot of people who've made it and felt like, again, it was this nice break from the heaviness of the meal. And more importantly, you can prepare it in advance. You're not going to be trying to get a tray of vegetables roasted while you're carving a turkey and putting everything else on the table.
And here's another listener who I think used one of your recipes. Amy, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a quick story. About 3 years ago, we moved into a house with a pear tree. And I looked on your website, and I found the recipe for pear bread. And since then, we have made your pear bread repeatedly. We love it. And it's one of the only pear bread recipes I've found. And interestingly enough, we just made it this morning. And it was delicious.
That's awesome. Do you make any tweaks to it?
Nope. We do it exactly as is, and it is fantastic.
Well, thank you for that. Amy. Enjoy your pear bread. And you say something, Deb, about there are a lot of recipes on the Internet, and some of them are bad recipes, not even tested. How should people decide, and how should they be really prudent and show reason with that sort of thing?
I feel like, you know, that it's true. The Internet is flooded with recipes. And if you want to make chicken or pear bread or whatever, you probably have so many options at this point. And I look for websites with reviews. If you don't know who's writing the recipe and you don't trust, you know, you don't know the source and it hasn't been reliable for you in the past and you don't really know where you're going. I mean, all of us have limited time and resources. Nobody wants to go home and work a couple hours on something and end up scraping it into the garbage. So I feel like if there's reviews or star ratings and you see a bunch of people talking about it, it's a pretty good sign. I mean, assuming they're saying good things, that the recipe's working. And it makes me feel a little bit better when I'm trying a new recipe, too.
I think Martha Stewart called your site cute, didn't she? I don't know if that's, you know, Madonna got very angry when somebody said she was cute. I remember back a number of years ago. But
Martha Stewart can call it anything she wants.
That's what I
fine
figured.
With me.
Here's Yvonne. Yvonne, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. You know, to that point, I just have to say, my husband and I have owned a restaurant for 20 years, and we have a million cookbooks. And there are a lot of bad recipes out there in those cookbooks. And I have to say about Deb, and thank you so much, every single thing I have ever made off your blog or one of your cookbooks has been spot on, fantastic. I've never had to scrape it. I've never had to throw it away. And I've given away so many recipes and told so many people about you because I really feel like you take that time to make it, to test it, and to make sure that it's really good. And so many people just throw these books out there, and you're not somebody who's doing that. So I just wanted to thank you for that.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you. I hope I can keep it up. My goodness.
Two kids, and you become more and more popular, and you've got book touring now. There's a lot. In fact, didn't you meet your husband on one of your earlier blogs, pre-Culinary Bob?
I did. Before it was Smitten Kitchen, it was just Smitten. It was way back in the dark ages of blogging where you didn't need to have a theme or a social media strategy or an Instagram handle. This is very much predates Instagram and the like. And I thought I would just write some stories. I needed a hobby. I needed a break from my job. And I thought I'd write about some of the bad dates I was going on. But I met my husband like 2 weeks later. He had left a comment. We went out for a drink and we got married 2 years later. So I had to find a new topic.
That's it's an unusual story, really. It ought to be in that New York Times love column or something like that. Meeting in a,
I guess,
in a blog.
I never even thought about that.
Well, you're a good writer, so maybe I've inspired something or been
a
catalyst. Here's Quinn, who says, at my aunt's house, my college Thanksgiving destination, they always make brownie trifle brownies and pudding and whipped cream and pieces of Heath bars. I miss it.
Wow.
Sounds pretty good.
Sounds really good.
Keegan writes, Go ahead, Deb. You can say.
Oh, no. I said one of my favorite topics, especially this time of year, is I love to hear what dishes. I mean, if you look at food magazines and cookbooks, it looks like everybody cooks the same thing. You know, a turkey, stuffing, gravy, potatoes, green beans, cranberries. But most families are a lot more blended. We have influences from all over the world. So I love hearing about what it would not be Thanksgiving without on your table. Is it lasagna? Is it kimchi? Is it this? I love to hear about that stuff.
International cuisine and international everything now, pretty much, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think especially if your family's gathering around the table, it's about what's home to them.
Well, we are going to continue with our guest, Deb Perlman. Her new book is called Smitten Kitchen Every Day, Triumphant and Unfussy New Favorites. And you may have questions about holiday cooking. You may have questions about recipes. You may have things you want to say or address to Deb. And you may have your own suggestions for what makes for great holiday cooking. We want to hear from you. Toll-free number 866-733-6786 or email forum at kqed.org or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is at kqedforum or go to our Facebook page or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're getting cooking tips from the Smitten Kitchen. Deb Perlman's our guest this hour. She's the author of a new book, her second cookbook. It's called Smitten Kitchen Every Day, Triumphant and Unfussy New Favorites. And I was talking about an article in Bon Appetit, which talks about indispensable recipes that she has brought forth and given birth to, so to speak, including brick hens with charred lemon, carrot salad with tahini, crisp chickpeas, salted pistachios. You also have kind of a lot of signature dishes, pretzel linzers with salted caramel, for example, or in your new book, you've got kale Caesar, which I think, in fact, is a lot of kale Caesar recipes out there, but yours is described as unapologetically inauthentic and so good you basically can't shut up about it.
This is true. I've talked about it a lot.
What is it exactly?
I'm going to talk to you. So again, I know how to make a proper Caesar dressing. I've done it with the egg yolks and the anchovies. And I was going to put that in the book. And then I thought, this is really me being dishonest. There's this other kind of hacked version I use where the egg yolks are. Again, it is not an authentic recipe. I feel like people get upset about this, but I'm making no claims of authenticity here. Instead of raw eggs, I use a little bit of mayo. And instead of minced anchovies, I use a little bit of Worcestershire sauce, which has anchovies in it. And I end up making this jar of dressing that is incredibly stable in the fridge, which is nice. You can come home to made salad dressing for weeks. And then instead of using croutons, I call it crushed croutons, but you can use plain breadcrumbs and cook them up in olive oil with seasoning, a little bit of garlic and lemon zest. And I layer it together with usually kale, but you can use other greens. And you mix the, you kind of put a little bit of crumbs between each layer. And then if you want to turn it into a meal, I will add some soft cooked eggs that have been chopped up. And it is together really one of my favorite things to eat when I come home. It's very filling. It feels really balanced. And it is also the thing that got my kids to like salad finally. It's just that kind of dressing. I find it very agreeable.
How much is health a matter with you? You said, for example, you have no claims of authenticity, and I know you've said you have no claims of being political either, but you know, eating food is political. I mean, in terms of what you decide to eat and specifically with health and those considerations, how much is that a part of your cooking calculus?
It is always in my head. It's not necessarily always in the writing, but I mean, my preference is for vegetables, for fruits, for things that have as few steps from where they started to our table. I feel like if you want a recipe for something with cream and cheese and a million other ingredients in it that come from packages, again, I've got my share, but you don't necessarily need help finding it. What I like to talk about is ways to turn vegetables into a main dish or maybe meat into a side dish so you're not using as much of it.
Here's a listener named Karen who writes, Deb is my personal cooking heroine. Her recipe for roasted tomato soup with broiled cheddar is an annual celebration of the end of summer tomato harvest and a recipe that friends share and reshare every year. Keegan wants to know what your favorite way to do stuffing or dressing for Thanksgiving is, and what do you put in it? Well, we heard a little of that before. Did you want to maybe elaborate some more?
Sure. I kind of like the classics with stuffing. I've made a lot of versions over the years, but I'd say the most popular one. Last year I had actually, this is not normal, but I happened to have some leftover challah dough from another shoot I was doing, and I just baked it up. And I used half challah and half of a sourdough bread. And I felt like it was such a great balance, the slightly sweet and the slightly salty. And then I saute onions and herbs and celery in a good amount of butter. I don't feel like there's any reason to skimp when you're making stuffing. It's not like we eat this every week of the year. And then I add broth and probably a little more butter at the end and just a lot of seasoning. And I found it to be using good bread, I think, gets you further than almost any ingredient you can add to stuffing.
Well, I'm going to go to some more of your calls, but first let me go to a few of your comments. We're getting tips, as I said. Brandon writes, my technique in terms of getting moist white meat is to keep the breast meat cold as the rest of the bird comes to room temperature before you bake by placing an ice pack on the breast. This creates a temperature variance between the white and dark meats. Obviously, remove the ice pack before you bake. This will take the white meat longer to cook, thus resulting in moist white meat while the dark is cooked through. Works every time.
That's a great idea.
It is indeed. And here's Stephanie who wants to know, what about gluten-free vegetarian main dish options for Thanksgiving?
Let's see. Gluten-free and vegetarian. I feel like a lot of most vegetable preparations can definitely be made vegetarian. I feel like it's really about what you're craving. I have a cousin who's been vegan since long before it was on trend, and she's always brought a restuffed butternut squash, and she brings so many. She actually, because what'll happen is that people neglect the turkey to eat it. And so she usually scoops it out. And again, I've tried to get the recipe from her, but she kind of makes it up as she goes along. And she will cook up some, I want to say probably onions and garlic. She'll definitely add some lentils or beans, maybe some thinly sliced mushrooms, leeks. And then I'm not sure. She doesn't always put bread in there, and you could always use gluten-free breadcrumbs if you want to thicken it up. Some broth, and then she packs it back together and bakes it in the oven. I think it's all about the spices. I mean, she's definitely used this as an excuse to work in a bunch of Middle Eastern spices, and it's so good. You could use a nice sauce on it, too. If you're not dairy-free, you might do like a nice yogurt, like a lemony yogurt sauce. I'm thinking like a yogurt sauce with a bit of minced preserved lemons in it would probably be really nice, a salty sauce with that.
So how many recommendations do you get from relatives and friends along those lines?
Not as many as you think. There's definitely people in my family and friends who cook, but I feel like the majority are not huge cooks. We have a few people in each group that do, but I'm probably the only crazed cook in my crew.
And here are some more callers. Edward, join us.
Yes, I have a two-part question from San Jose.
Go ahead.
I'm not the cook in the family. My wife is. I help her. I clean up. I chop stuff for her. I help her. So we were doing chicken soup from scratch last week, and we tried something new that did not work, and that was gluten-free noodles. And what happened is as the soup cooked, the noodles began to dissolve and turn the soup into mush. And we were wondering, is there a solution to that problem? That's my first question. So
okay,
you want to address that or you want me to ask
sure.
the other one?
Yeah, let's
I feel like discussion. I actually have a pretty – I was going to say I have a quick answer. I feel like what I would probably do is if you can find most – a lot of rice noodles, most actually, are gluten-free – and they really hold up much better in broths. I would probably take some rice vermicelli and maybe break it up into smaller pieces and use that instead. I find that they're, I mean, they're certainly great in, you know, more Asian noodle soups. I feel like it's got to work great in chicken noodle soup, too.
Okay.
And naturally
good.
Gluten-free.
Now, oh, thank you. We'll try that. Now, part two, homemade biscotti. We make biscotti with all the ingredients, including anise seed and the something called anisette liqueur. And
ooh,
I've
yeah.
always wondered, if anise seed is in the ingredient, why do you need the liqueur since it all evaporates during the cooking process?
Well, I mean, I'm definitely not an expert on anise seed liqueur, but I know that I've definitely asked myself this question before, like, why are we adding lemon two ways? But I think you get a different nuance from the flavor. I mean, from the seed, you're going to get the nuttier, more oil-based flavor. You know, it's going to be more of a crunch and a texture. I feel like from the liqueur, you're going to get a more floral notes of it. I do not think that the alcohol fully cooks out. I mean, I wouldn't worry about like the small trace that's left, but I always think it's a misnomer, this idea that the alcohol fully cooks out. So I feel like it's just it's a different way of highlighting the same flavor. But you could always try it with just one or the other and see if you're missing what you get from the other one.
Yeah, let me thank Edward for the call, and we want to get as many of you on here as we can. Let me get Noelle on next. Noelle, thanks for waiting. Join us.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am a mom of a little one, and cooking is my therapy, so I'm wondering, Deb, what suggestions you have for finding that balance between everything.
Sorry, you're breaking up there. Balance between cooking and life itself, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely not easy when you have a little kid underfoot. You know, you have to, especially, I mean, it's great if they want to help, but it doesn't necessarily help get dinner on the table quickly, which is often the goal. I feel like don't underestimate the value of a recipe that you're really excited about or whatever you're craving that day. I feel like the fastest way to make cooking feel like a chore is to start cooking what everyone wants you to make only if it's not something you want to make or something that you feel like you should be cooking. So when you're flipping through a magazine or a cookbook or, you know, recipes are flying by in your social media feeds and something grabs you, run to that. It's telling you something. Maybe you haven't had it in a while or you're craving something new. I find that those are the dishes, even if it sometimes takes a little bit more time, it's the thing you really wanted and it won't feel as much like work. I will tell you though, I mean, definitely certainly in the early days, there were times that I would start a dish one day and then just put plastic wrap over everything prepped and just finish it the next. It's not the most practical, but it's okay to call it at some point if you're running out of time and come back to it the next day and make something simpler for the immediate meal.
Good luck, Noelle. Thank you for calling. And again, we're talking to Deb Pearlman. Her new book is called Smitten Kitchen Every Day, Triumphant and Unfussy New Favorites, a tip from a listener, Cynthia, who writes, the best vegetarian Thanksgiving I ever had was a pile of stuffing with various mushrooms. They used two leeks for the drumsticks, wrapped the leeks and the stuffing in pastry, attaching the leeks to the side so it looked like a turkey, plus lots of mushroom gravy. It was the best.
That sounds incredible.
And here's Keith, who has a question for you, Deb. He says, our Christmas tradition is fresh cracked crab with some kind of pasta with a cream sauce and an antipasto-type salad tray. What suggestions do you have for a special crab-based meal? We want to try something new this year.
Oh, my goodness. I haven't cooked with crabs that much. I think you finally found something I can't just answer off the top of my head. But if you give me 15 minutes, I'll probably have so many recommendations. I'll have a lot more. I could tweet it out, I suppose, too.
Well, if you lived here on the West Coast, you'd have a lot better access to crab, probably, than you do in Manhattan.
I think so. And I would probably have a lot more ideas. So I feel like somebody else is going to come forward with a great suggestion. I want to be at your meal. It sounds amazing.
Well, if you want to make a response to that question, we certainly welcome hearing from you. Again, you can join us, 866-733-6786. And Regina from Sonoma joins us next. Regina, welcome.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Quick things. We usually make these great wild mushroom tamales for Thanksgiving with like four different cheeses and different things. So that's always a nice treat. But for solstice, I like to make rabbit, and my rabbit always seems to be a little dry.
Oh, wow. I think you guys got me two times in a row. I've never cooked rabbit before. I'm sorry. I obviously need to expand my repertoire before I'm on the show again. I think I hit some limits. Sorry.
Mark it down. Crab, rabbit, and whatever
crab,
else may come.
You're on it. It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Actually, I'm seeing a tweet here from Lisa who says, love this show, but getting really hungry. and if someone has some rabbit suggestions, we welcome your quick call to us on that as well. Let me go next to Jana in Hayward. Jana, you're on. Hi.
Oh, hi. Okay, so I am thinking about making a salad this Thanksgiving with, you know, slices of oranges or tangerines or and pear, and then apples, and baking the apple with some sugar and cinnamon, and putting it in a bowl because I think it would look really pretty for one thing. On the table, but do you have any suggestions for adding anything to that, like maybe some lime or lemon squeeze or something like that?
So you said it's a salad and you want to bake it up?
I want to bake the apple slices.
Okay. Oh, okay, and then add them to a green salad maybe?
Add them to pears slices and orange slices or tangerine slices.
Did you want to put greens in there, too, or just really like a fruit-based salad?
I'm kind of asking. You know, I'm listening to you.
Uh-huh. I kind of, like, my immediate thought was that if you're going to...
Pretty on the table, too, you know?
Sorry, what was that? I'm sorry.
I think it would look really pretty on the table, you know, the color.
Yeah. I feel like it might be nice to do some lightly dressed lemony greens on top, just a little bit, so you can still see what's underneath. You might sprinkle it with some of those pomegranate seeds we mentioned earlier. I also feel like a nice crunchy sort of nut, maybe some well-toasted pecans, walnuts, or almonds might add a nice bit of texture to it. But I feel like as soon as I hear baked apples or pears, orange, and salad, I really want some lemony greens on top. And I know not everyone likes fennel, but some thinly sliced fennel might be nice, too.
What about Jana's notion that, you know, it ought to look pretty? I mean, you know, there are a lot of people who try to put dishes out just with an aesthetic sense of how they look. How do you feel about that?
I think it's okay. I think it's fine to want to make your food look pretty. I wouldn't, like, kill yourself over a fussy preparation. I think that, generally speaking, simply prepared food does look really nice on a plate. But I think, especially when you're entertaining, it's nice to sort of show something off in a different way. So I feel like it could look really pretty. And it's really just about looking at the dish and seeing if you want to add some more color.
Well, here's a listener you can help from apparently his crying. This is Serpa who writes, I almost cry every year as I make my dressing with chestnuts. I still haven't perfected a way of peeling them. Any ideas?
I am not wonderful at it. I love chestnuts so much, but I know there's a lot of great tricks out there, but I'm not great at it. I often find, though, that if they're really still stuck in there, that it might benefit from a little bit more roasting time, that it just isn't separating yet. And, of course, making a good X to start with.
Another tip for Thanksgiving cooking, and let me get your response to this, Deb. Dana writes, I'm from South Louisiana, and I now make cornbread and rice dressings for Thanksgiving, made traditionally with the giblets and baked with evaporated milk. I can never have regular bread stuffing after being used to these.
That sounds incredible.
It does sound good, doesn't it? All right, let me get another caller on. Mandy, you're on. Morning.
Hi. I have a comment or a reply for the crab question.
Yes.
Yay.
And I have a friend of mine who throws a party like this every year, and it's fun. Is to make a bouillabaisse or a chiapino, and the host can make the broth, and then whoever's attending the party can bring different kinds of seafood, and crab could definitely be included. And it's great with pasta. It's great with garlic bread.
Great suggestion. Thank you. In fact, we're getting some suggestions, not only on crab, but on rabbit, and I think Holly has suggestions on both. Hi, Holly.
Hi. The rabbit answer is to bake it in milk, whole milk.
Oh.
And it won't be dry.
That makes sense. And you had a thought about crab as well?
Oh, we've done bouillabaisse or chiapino for years, too, so I had nothing new on that.
All right. Well, good. I like when questions like that are brought up and answered. Brianna writes, we fix two types of cranberry sauce, traditional and a cranberry relish, because when my partner and I started hosting, we decided we could both get what we wanted. Serving two similar and yet equally essential cranberry dishes at Thanksgiving is what being an adult is all about. Never heard that before.
I agree with that.
Right.
I agree, though. But not to have to choose, especially, you know, you're if you marry somebody or you have a new partner, they bring their own family traditions. I think it's okay to make everyone happy. It's good hosting.
Here's Liam. Liam, join us. Hi.
Hi. So I guess a couple things. One, from the East Coast, Chesapeake Bay area, just do a beer batter base for a whole bushel of crabs and then smother them in Old Bay. That's the best right there. Traditionally, with my family, my sister does an amazing sweet potato casserole where she does, you know, like a brown sugar cinnamon and some marshmallows in there. But my absolute favorite dish has got to be doing a Celtic tradition shepherd's pie. It drives me crazy when people do it with beef. It's got to be ground lamb.
Oh, so interesting. So I shouldn't tell you about the vegetarian shepherd's pie in my new book? No.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you certainly can. I mean, I love the show, and I love new cooking tips. I mean, there's no limitations when it comes to food.
Yeah, and a lot of folks who don't like meat, so tell us about your new recipe.
Oh, I was sort of a late answer to the vegetarian main dish. I was remembering that I have this wild mushroom shepherd's pie in the book. And again, it's either if you're trying to eat less meat or you don't eat meat or you just love mushrooms, but I start with a really deeply flavored mushroom stew at the bottom. Stew is not as nice sounding as it should be. It's not that mushy, but it has tomato paste, a bit of sherry vinegar, a little bit of sherry in it too, and garlic. I use some dried porcinis that have been rehydrated, and also the soaking liquid from them, which adds a real oomph to the broth. And so basically just as many flavors as you can get in there, and then a nice mashed potato with sour cream and buttermilk on top, and no skimping on the butter there, because it's really a centerpiece dish. But it's really nice if you have vegetarians in the family, or even just as a substantial side dish or a different way to do potatoes.
I don't know if this is, and let me thank the caller, in the whole context of what we're talking about is holiday food, but when you're talking about latkes, makes me think of bagels, natural kind of association. And you've got a kind of smart way of repackaging of what bagels what bagels are doing. I'm thinking about the everything drop biscuits with cream cheese.
Yeah. Again, it's not exactly your authentic New York bagel, but I love biscuits. I love how fast they are to make, and I really had fun working some cream cheese into a biscuit dough, and then you drop them in a mixture of the seeds you'd put on an everything bagel and bake them up, and it gets really nice and crunchy on the outside, and it's really lovely in the inside. To again do with eggs, or you could add a little bit of, you know, more cream cheese and lox. You could do it bagel style. Not an authentic New York bagel, but all the flavors that I love.
And let me read some more comments. Judith writes, last Christmas I had a disastrous result with Martha Stewart's best mac and cheese recipe when I substituted corn pasta, which melted into a mess. I was able to transform the recipe leftovers into corn pudding by adding some frozen corn and liquid, and everybody loved it. There's Allison who writes, I love your mom's apple cake, but I'm trying to cut sugar. How much can I reduce the sugar without harming the beautiful perfection of this cake?
Oh, interesting. I know it always looks like a lot of sugar when you look at the recipe, but the thing is that it's a huge cake. It is in proportion to the cake. I'm not saying that you can't, you know, maybe knock out, I don't know, 25% or maybe half, you know, maybe up to half a cup. But do remember that the sugar provides the moisture in the cake too. And so if you take it away, it's one of the things that provides moisture. You might find the texture affected. Just try to keep in mind that, I mean, when you pick up this cake, it feels like a 5-pound cake. It makes a lot of cake, and that's why there's more sugar in it than a smaller cake would have.
Deb Perlman is the creator of the cooking blog Smitten Kitchen, and her new cookbook is called Smitten Kitchen Every Day, Triumphant and Unfussy New Favorites. And Leilani writes, I have a beautiful Fuyu persimmon tree, in my front yard, and we just harvested lots of fruit. Do you have any favorite recipes using Fuyu persimmons? We'd love to hear them.
Oh my goodness, you guys are torturing there, maybe, yeah. I know you're tortured. We do have persimmons, but not nearly as much as you do on the West Coast. So you guys have picked all the things that I haven't cooked with so much. But I've had some wonderful persimmon jams, and I've also had some really nice in a salad. It can be. I feel like there's so much you can do with it. And I've also seen persimmon butter before, where it's cooked down like a very smooth jam, and I feel like the texture really takes well to it, and it really. Enunciates the flavor of it, which is the best part.
And Casey wants to know if you have any tips for hosting a party in a small apartment.
Just do it. Just do it. No, I mean, nobody's, look, if you have anyone who's coming to your apartment to judge you for, you know, like not being able to pull off some, you know, Martha Stewart-ish feast, they sound like terrible people anyway. But I think it's really fun. Do ahead everything you can. You don't have to show off your, and we already know you're a deeply skilled cook, but not every dish has to be a centerpiece. I feel like it's nice to focus on one thing, maybe make one side or a salad and outsource the rest. Buy your baguettes, have your friends pick up wine. If you want to make more than one dish, you know, that's warm and freshly cooked, definitely something that reheats well. So if you want to do a brisket or a roast or short ribs as the main dish, maybe do a potato gratin, which you could make the day before and reheat really well. It reheats great.
More of your calls. Allison, thank you for joining us. Allison, are you there?
Oh, yeah. Hi, Deborah. I just wanted to thank you for your first cookbook. I loved it. And my daughter went
thank
through
you.
And sort of marked with sticky notes all her favorite recipes, so it's still got all these things in it, say like yum, totally yum, and so on.
Thank you.
So it's very well loved and been well kind of leafed through, but I wanted to point out your ginger snap tart for Thanksgiving, the marble ginger snap tart, which is kind of a mixture of a cheesecake and a pumpkin pie, and it's just such a delicious Thanksgiving dessert, and you can sort of do a gluten-free spin on it with gluten-free ginger snap biscuits, as we would call them. So it's I just wanted to point that out as a great Thanksgiving alternative. Yeah.
Thank you, Allison.
I love a good all-purpose Thanksgiving dessert, because nobody has the ability to make, you know, four or five desserts. So if I can combine, say, you know, pumpkin pie and cheesecake, you know, without compromising either, I'm pretty happy.
And let me thank Allison for her call. We're getting a persimmon suggestion here from a listener who says, this year I plan a wrap prosciutto around slices of persimmons instead of melon and serve it as an appetizer. It seems more fitting for the season. And Beth Wright says, Deb Perlman, ever seen any of Rachel Koo's Tiny Paris Kitchen YouTube videos or cookbooks? We live in a tiny home, and Deb Perlman and Rachel Koo are geniuses when it comes to doing more with less. Do you know her work, Deb?
I do. I love her first cookbook, and I love her videos. They're wonderful.
And Stephanie wants to know what your kids' favorites are. She says, I have four kids, all with different tastes. Just curious what your kids' favorites are.
So I have two kids. One's a pretty good eater. I can kind of, sometimes, you know, he's resistant to the idea of, you know, beans baked in tomato sauce, and it takes a little coercing. But usually after he tries it, he comes around and agrees that obviously I'm the best cook on earth. Okay, I'm embellishing a little bit. I have a little girl who eats almost nothing. It's really unclear what cheese subsists on. So I have one of each, and I feel like this is a familiar story with parents. But they like that Caesar salad. I was really surprised.
The
kale
one.
They don't even mind it on kale. Yeah, I've put it on romaine too, which is crunchier, but they both eat it. They both like that farro with the tomatoes. Things that have tomatoes or tomato sauce in them tend to go over well. They both ate the pizza beans pretty well. One a little better than the other. Obviously they like cake and pizza and pasta, so I feel like those are givens with kids. But I have a black bean soup on the site that I've been making for years, and I recently refreshed it for dinner, and I found that by using taco as a verb, that by adding some taco-ish toppings to it, it made it a lot more fun for the kids. So instead of just doing it black bean soup in a bowl, we would add a spoonful of sour cream, maybe some sliced avocados, a few rings of pickled sweet red onions, and then we used some crumbled baked tortilla chips. And it took a soup that's always been wholesome and fun and actually very easy to make and made it pretty kid-friendly.
Are your kids drawn of cooking? You think they're going to be cooks, chefs, possibly?
I hope so. Either that or they're going to go fully in the opposite direction and only eat fruit from boxes and powders.
What about your husband? Does he cook?
He doesn't get to, but I do not doubt that he could with some practice.
Well, it's good to have you on. Happy holidays to you. And I know many people enjoy and relish your recipes. That has nothing to do with relish being added to anything except in the figurative sense. Smitten Kitchen every day, triumphant and unfussy new favorites. Thanks, Deb Perlman. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on.
And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irina Gucci, Tina Larberg, and Susan Britton. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. Engineer is Danny Bringer. And our engineer today is Katie. Engagement producers are Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from Amanda Font. Interns are Anna Sterla and Patrick Fitzgerald. Managing editor is Ethan Lindsay. Our executive producer is Holly Kernan. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.